Brian, as you finish up your cider donut and apple cider.
I love autumn.
And your cider pie. And your filet mignon cider donut pie.
Apple mignon.
Your apple mignon. How was that big old run?
Peter, I ran yesterday.
I know you did.
It was the most glorious running weather.
Was it the farthest you've run in a long time?
Give me low 50s. Was sprinkling out.
That was your mileage? Low 50s?
I had a 15 to do.
A one-fiver.
One-fiver. I find it very important. I have to mentally figure out what route I'm going to go on. I did that. I ran the first 10 fine. No problem.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Yeah, it was pretty easy. I said, this will be fine. Then the back five. What happened was my quad started getting seizing up a little bit, and whatever those... all the connective parts between your lower abs and your hips and your quads, all of that started to explode. So after a couple of miles, I had to stop. You know, I was walking across the streets when I'd hit a street. And then I was going downhill, and I literally had to just stop and stretch it out and walk in circles for a few minutes. It was real pain. It wasn't the kind of pain you could push through. It was the kind of pain where I had to stop.
May I ask you some rudimentary questions?
Of course.
Had you spent the night before hydrating appropriately?
If by hydrating you mean a night out on the town, yes.
That's exactly what I mean. Good. Right. Good. Did you have enough water with you for the actual run?
I did. I had my Camelback, so I was fully hydrated. I had about a liter and a half with a Nun tablet. If you want to ask a question, do I put a Nun tablet in my Camelback? The answer is yes.
Okay, I don't know what a Nun tablet is.
They're like these little tablets you throw in. It gives you a little electrolytes and a little effervescence in your water.
Like an Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Like an Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Did you hydrate? Did you nutrient up? Did you do any sort of...
I did. I ate breakfast, which was fine, and I brought the appropriate number of goos, so I was fine that way.
So your pain or your difficulty you were experiencing was solely based, if I may, and I'm not a medical doctor.
Neither am I.
On the fact is that you're old, mm-hmm. and it's getting harder every day.
Yeah.
To do just basic things.
I wouldn't call training for a marathon a basic thing, sir.
Were you putting one foot in front of the other, Brian?
I was. That's a basic motion.
That's a basic thing.
What I will chalk this up to is not doing enough stretching and foam rolling on a regular basis.
There you go.
I've done a little bit of it, but not enough.
There you go.
And the fact that I had done both stadiums and a lot of hill work just 48 hours before. And I think that I was still dealing with the effects of that.
Prior strain.
Correct.
Well, I think you're learning as you go here.
It's the only way to move forward, Peter, by learning. I'm going to continue to train through the pain, unless it's a lot of pain. Then I'm going to stop and I'm going to walk and wait till the pain subsides. Then I'll try going again. How, actually, Peter?
Yeah.
I think you need to come clean with something.
Okay.
Not so long ago, we were both very excited when you announced that you had run a mile.
Uno milio.
And we both said, hey, you're back.
Yeah. Nope. Oops.
And you didn't have really any consequences immediately following running that mile. But when you went to physical therapy a couple days later, it was a different story, right?
To paraphrase MC Scat Cat and Paula Abdul, two steps forward, one step back.
Ouch.
So I went to go see Jill, my physical therapist, and I was in a little bit of a pain situation going on. And she said, what's this all about? What's this here? And she grabbed my Achilles tendon. She actually held me up off the ground from my Achilles tendon. And shook me a little bit, like I was a fish. And she said, what's this? Why is this all inflamed and big again? What's happening here? Did you go for a run? And I said, what? No, walk. I went for a big walk. And she pressed it a little bit harder. And I punched my fist through a concrete wall. And I said, okay, I did. I went for a 1 mile run.
Sounds like it was an inquisition.
It was very similar to that. Because then she took out the massage roller, like a little rolling pin.
Yeah.
She strolled that down my calves and into my tendon and that. That was real. And she said, how's it feel now? I said, it hurts. She goes, yeah, it does. Because we had a plan. And we were going to do something here. And you skipped ahead. And then she proceeded to make me hurt.
So you had broken, you'd gone off script, Pete.
I broke a promise.
You felt good.
Yeah.
The run felt good.
And I said that to her. I said, look, at the end of the mile, I felt so good. And I knew I should stop. Like, I didn't go for two. I just went for one. And she said, yeah, you should have gone for none. I'll tell you when it's okay right. to run.
Right. Listen to me.
We're actually on a plan here. We're actually working on balance and strength and push off. And then you can put your whole body on it. Because what you're talking about here is a length of time. She's like, how long was that mile? Was that a 10-minute mile? I was like, yeah, it was about a 10-minute mile. She's like, yeah, that's 10 minutes that you're up on that Achilles that you're not supposed to be just yet. You selfish, selfish man. So I was humbled because she's a professional and I'm a chump.
You're just a little injured.
I'm a little child, runner. Yeah. And she's like, you got to go through a process here.
Right.
It's acceptance, really. Yeah. Remember when I spoke to you
yes.
about the framework of failure?
Are you solidly within the framework of failure right
I'm
now?
Carrying around a giant canvas and frame of failure.
The frame of failure.
The frame of failure.
You're framed by failure right now.
I have gesso failure. I have multi-acrylics.
Acrylic oils.
Oil all over. Yeah, no, it was bad. So needless to say, that was the one and only mile I ran in the month of September.
Okay.
I have no plans to run in the near future. I saw the doctor this past Friday, and he thought at least another month.
Oof.
And I, yeah. And yeah, it's really affecting me.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't have to take as long off as you have, but.
I'm aging horribly.
He was. There is something going on with your beard that I think needs explanation.
It's like someone burned the picture of Dorian Villa in the attic, and all of a sudden I'm turning into this thing.
Yeah. What, describe this. It's sort of puffed out.
I've gone angry cattail all across my face, and the beard is straight out on all ends.
If anybody remembers Surgeon General C. Everett Koop.
I'm full Koop.
It's a little
I've
like
gone
that.
Full Koop. It's... And I'm committing to this look until yeah. such a time that I can run again.
Okay, so the beard has gotten very strange, and it's staying that way until you can run again.
Yeah, it's something
you're protesting your own.
That's it. That's it. That's exactly what it is.
Injury.
It's my silent scream to the world in beard form.
Wow.
Yeah, we're getting there. Everything's fine. Hey, Brian, we have a couple interviews on tap here.
We do. They're very exciting. The first one was the winner of a 5K, a local 5K that the artist in residence and I ran, and a high school kid won it, and he happened to know some of the people that we were with, and I said, why don't I just interview you? Because how exciting to be on the high school cross-country team and then win your hometown 5K.
That's exciting.
So this is Ryan Iapica from Linfield, Mass, and we'll just go right to the scene. Ryan, you just won the Best Buddies 5K race in Linfield, Massachusetts. Where are you from?
I'm from Linfield.
And do you run on the track team or the cross-country team?
I do. I'm a cross-country team. I'm the junior captain.
For the high school?
Yes.
Well, congratulations on winning. What was your winning time?
I think it was around 18. I didn't really see the exact time. It was 18-something, though.
And was that one of your best times for a 5K?
For a 5K, yeah. Last year I did the turkey trot, and I think it was upper 18 or 19, so like I improved this year.
What are your distances when you're running for the team, the cross-country team?
For the cross-country, it's usually like 2.8 to 3.1, so like the times vary. But like today was good for a 3.1, and I like the road race because it's not like hilly or anything, and okay. It's nice, yeah.
So you prefer road races to
in the woods or on the dirt?
I do, absolutely.
Really?
Yes, it's
really?
A lot better. I like it.
Do you think you're going to continue running 5Ks?
I do. I like running 5Ks. I really like running. It just takes like stress off my mind.
Mm-hmm. Have you done longer distances at all?
Just during practice. Like we do like 5 mile and 6 mile runs.
Do you do any other sports?
Just running.
Okay.
Cross country and track.
And I have one serious question. How do you get the stink out of your tech shirts?
What?
How do you get the armpit stink out of your tech shirts?
I do not know. You know, my mom washes the clothes.
All right, congratulations.
Thank
that
you.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
Keep on running.
HWYRD, how was your run today?
Brian, that guy sounds like he's about 7 years old. Seriously, what's going on?
There's a photo of he and I together. I think I might have put it on social media. We can attach it to this show somewhere. But the photo, I'm sort of looming over him. I must weigh 100 pounds more than he does. And it's sort of proportionally like November Project's Brogan Graham. When he stands next to me, I look like little scrawny high school kid. Well, he's sort of a giant, and then Ryan would be that way standing next to me.
You guys are like Russian nesting dolls.
We're Russian nesting dolls.
Seriously, though, does that kid even have his learner's permit? What's
the
story?
I don't know. Well, he doesn't need one because he's fast.
He's fast.
He's very fast.
He doesn't need to be a car driver. He's fine.
No, as if you could hop on his back, he could take his friends wherever they need to go. Very quickly.
Well, that was very fun, and that was that was at the same that interview happened at the exact same moment I was watching social media guru Anna Brooks cross the finish line of her 10K.
First 10K ever.
Congratulations. I gotta say, watching a 10K come together, start in the most beautiful of areas on the
right on the water,
Cape Ann there, Gloucester, and then watching them all come through. Is heart-wrenching, and it's terrible when all you want to do is run. And not unlike having a weekly podcast where I sit and talk about running.
It doubles down on the
man.
The non-running emotions.
Yes.
Flooding through your system.
It does.
Speaking of flooding through your system.
I wish I could.
Have you ever had caffeine flood through your system?
I was going to say, I wish I could.
In a very efficient way.
I wish I could deliver caffeine to my body in a better way than drinking it.
Yeah. Well, if you had
a degree in biochemistry,
you might invent caffeinated gum.
If you were a two-time Olympian.
Yeah. So what we're talking about, folks, is this week's very special guest, Nick Simmons, 800-meter runner. Two-time Olympian.
Beijing and London.
That's right. He's the CEO of Run Gum, which is caffeinated gum, which he explains fully both the reasoning behind it and how it works and how people use it. There's also a little bit of controversy around him, although I don't know how controversial it is. But
yeah, he made the news a year or so ago, back when he would not sign the exclusive waiver with Nike. And the USA team saying that he would not publicize or promote other products, but he'd already had a deal with Brooks Running and a couple other places. And he said, no, this is how I make my livelihood. I'm not going to exclusively sign away to Nike. And they dropped him from the team.
That's right. And team USA. Yeah,
and he was in the press quite a bit. If you Google him, you'll see a lot of information about that.
Yeah, and he's also auctioned off his skin during... as a billboard during certain races for the highest bidder for advertising. A
little temporary tattoo action.
A little temporary tattoo. And he explains how difficult and, frankly, how rare it is for anybody, even at the highest levels, Olympians, international track superstars, to even eke out a middle-class living, much less that of athletes in many other professional sports. So, you know, I would throw my hat in support of what he's doing out there.
Yeah, so Nick Simmons called in. We're going to speak to him over Skype in just a second. And I started off the conversation with, well, I think, the most important question we could ask.
That's true. You went right for the gold.
Well, he has impressive stats up and down, but this, I think, was the most important stat I could ask him about. I want to, if I may, I know you're a very busy man, but I want to lead off. You've, of course, done many things, and your stats are very impressive, But the thing that jumps off the screen into my face is your impressive stat of a beer mile of 5:19. Is that correct, sir?
That is correct. I ran that right after the London Olympic Games. I came home and was looking to blow off some steam, and so I went out to the local track here in Eugene, Oregon, and cranked out a 5:19.
That's pretty awesome. Is that in the sort of history of the beer mile? That's got to be a pretty good
one. Yeah, is that a record?
I think it was an American record at the time, but beer miling has come so far in the last 4 years. People are frequently running under 5 minutes now.
Well, the technology is there now, right?
Yeah, the technology's finally caught up.
Well, soon I'm sure it'll be an Olympic sport.
You know, fingers crossed, right?
We're going to get to your Olympic runs in a minute, but I was talking with some other runners, and we were talking about we're not so far removed from the generation when even professional football players, their best retirement plan was to move back to their hometown and open up, you know, like a car dealership or a sports bar. And I think people would be surprised at how few people who are professional elite track runners can even make a living as in their sport.
Yeah, a recent statistic by the Track and Field Athletes Association estimates that over 50% of professional track and field athletes here in America live below the poverty line. And it's just not right. And there's plenty of money to go around. There are billions of dollars exchanging hands on the hard work of track and field athletes. It's just that very few of those dollars ever make it to the athletes. The governing bodies are so greedy, and they confiscate all of the money and all of the advertising space for themselves. And it makes it really, really hard for Olympians to make a fair wage. And the problem is that our sport is so closely linked to the Olympic movement, and the Olympic movement is so closely linked to amateurism,
right,
that everyone is either thinking two things. If you're a boomer, then you've spent most of your life associating the Olympic Games with amateurism. And so if I talk to a baby boomer, they say, oh, well, how can you be a professional and still compete in the Olympic Games? Which obviously pros have been allowed to compete in the Olympic Games since the late 80s. If I talk to a millennial or a Generation Z, they say, well, you're an Olympian, you must be making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
You know? So those are the two extremes. The younger generations understand professional sports as extremely lucrative because they read headlines about MLB or NHL contracts, NFL contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But then there's you know, the reality of most track and field athletes are just really struggling to get by. I'm talking about Olympic medalists living below the poverty line, and that's right. Absolutely unacceptable.
That's eye-opening. But what is the lifestyle like? I think some of us envision you all move to Oregon or to Colorado or to some enclave where all the Olympic track athletes work out together, and I'm sure it's much more individualized like that, and you have to scrape a living together at the same time.
Yeah, it is very confusing, and kids coming out of college that want to run pro, there's no real resources for them. So I always, you know, try to say, hey, I've got 10 minutes for anybody coming out of college that wants to talk about this stuff, because coaches will bullshit you, agents will sell their own agenda, and I have no skin in the game when it comes to an athlete turning pro. I just want to see kids go on to have the opportunities that I had. And I was really fortunate coming out of school that one of these programs did pick me up. I was training here in Salem, Oregon at Willamette University. And fortunately Nike came and said, we're starting a group down in Eugene and we want you to join it. So those are probably, you know, that's the exception to the rule. Most kids just kind of like get thrown into the world of professional athletes, professional track and field. I kind of had my hand held by Frank Gagliano and the Nike Oregon Track Club. But again, I was barely scraping by. I was on a contract that allowed me to train full time. But in order to do that, I had to still live like a broke college kid. It was not this glamorous lifestyle driving around in a Bentley. I was, you know, driving around in a beat up old car and, mm-hmm. you know, living like a college kid still. But I liked the simplicity of it. There is something to be said for the simplicity of the lifestyle of training like that. But I was one of the few that actually got my shot. So I just want to see an economic model that allows every kid coming out of college that wants to train professionally to have that opportunity.
Can you speak a little bit about the genesis behind Run Gum? Clearly that is a major passion of yours. Where did that idea come from and how did you execute it?
Yeah, well, here's another thing. You know, if you want to have longevity after your legs don't allow you to, you know, to run in circles anymore, then you got to look into other things. You were talking about football players going back to their home and starting a car business. This is my car business. I sell caffeinated chewing gum, and I absolutely love it. So Run Gum is essentially, if I give you just a quick pitch, it's everything that's in an energy drink dehydrated out and put into two pieces of chewing gum. So it has caffeine, it has taurine, it has B vitamins. And you might be saying, well, why chewing gum? Chewing gum as a delivery vehicle presents so many advantages over drinking an energy drink or an energy shot. You absorb these stimulants, these performance-enhancing stimulants sublingually. You can absorb them up to 5 times faster than if you have to swallow something. And you also have the added advantage of not having heavy acidic liquid sloshing around in your stomach. So This was kind of born out of necessity. I love the way that drinks make me feel before competition or before practice in terms of, you know, mental alertness and energy, but I absolutely hate the way it makes my stomach feel. So I actually have a degree in biochemistry, graduated from Willamette University class of 2006 with a degree in biochem, and I knew there had to be a better way to deliver these performance enhancing stimulants to the system, and compressed chewing gum was that improvement. It's just like if you think about Nicorette, you know, delivering nicotine into the system. Now you've got Run Gum. It allows you to have these performance-enhancing stimulants delivered to your system and not have anything, you know, any junk in your stomach. It's sugar-free. It's calorie-free. It's gluten-free. You know, it is just the energy that you want and not everything else.
What's its duration in the system? I'm out for a long run. We have a lot of people who are just coming to long runs, and that is a big complaint that people get a little nauseous from either goos or other drinks or other bars. So curious as to if I'm out for a 6 or an 8 mile run, will 2 pieces hold me for the whole run?
The way that the human body metabolizes these stimulants, everyone's a little bit different. You know, I find that I like to chew 2 pieces, so one pack contains two pieces, which is about 100 milligrams of caffeine, very similar to an energy drink or a cup of coffee. I like to chew 2 pieces, you know, for about 5 to 10 minutes to absorb all the active ingredients. And I do that right before I go run. I spit out my gum, and that will, I can feel that boost to my performance. I can feel that for about an hour. So if you're a 3-hour, 4-hour marathoner, you might need to chew Run Gum, you know, every hour or so. Yeah. And it's not uncommon for marathoners to tape packs of Run Gum to their bottles. You know, elite marathoners will do this and chew Run Gum at their aid stations. It's also extremely lightweight, and it comes in a waterproof packaging. So if you want to tuck it into your shorts or your sports bra, you know, you can rest assured that your product's going to be just as good an hour and a half into your run as it was before you even started your run.
I know you're biased, but can you rank your preference of flavors?
I am biased. I actually like them all, but you got to understand, I don't have a super discerning palate. I eat everything. There's not a single food that I don't like. So if I had to rank them in order of my preferences, it would probably be cinnamon, mint, and fruit, although I enjoy them all. And they sell pretty equally. They sell about 33% each flavor. Give or take a few percentage points.
Where's the best place for people to pick them up? Just specialized running stores? Can you do it online?
You know, I encourage people to go to RunGum.com. We are in over 250 running retail stores throughout the U.S. And as much as I like to support running retail, you can learn so much about our product by going to our website, RunGum.com. We have podcasts. We have a YouTube station. I write a blog every month. There's so much content there to inspire people to get outside and be the best athlete that they can be and learn about our product. So RunGum.com is where I send most of our listeners.
Well, my teeth are vibrating. This gum is so good. And I'm doing very...
I can vouch for its effectiveness. I'm ready to run out of the studio.
What flavor
right now
do you have in your mouth right now?
I have one piece of fruit gum.
And I did both pieces of cinnamon. Yeah,
and I've almost...
Easy!
Yeah,
I'm about ready to punch Brian in the face. This is great.
You know, and so many people like to say, you know, well, no, I like coffee. Trust me, no one likes coffee more than I do. I am an absolute caffeine addict. I love coffee. But it's 3 p.m. and you've got to go into a meeting, or it's, you know, 4:00 and you've got to get that afternoon run in, but you're really exhausted. You pop a piece or two of Run Gum in and you're just good to go. And you've already had a cup or two of coffee that morning. You don't want another cup of coffee.
Just this morning, I was up at 5:30 a.m. going to do a hill workout with November Project, and I was pretty tired, and the last thing I wanted to do is drink an entire cup of coffee on an empty stomach.
Exactly.
Before doing 4 miles of hill repeats.
Exactly. I mean, that's why we created. I've got a buddy that works for us. He's a surfer, and they try to get out before, you know, the sun even comes up. He goes, I don't have time to make a cup of coffee. I got to be on the water before, you know, before the swell settles down. And so he brings a couple in his wetsuit, and he's on his board waiting to catch that first ride while he's getting his caffeine fix. It's super lightweight, so cyclists love to carry it with them. I'm dabbling in mountaineering, and trust me, you're not going to carry an energy drink up 10,000 vertical feet, but you can carry a couple packs of Run Gum up without adding hardly any weight to your pack. So it's just a very versatile way to get these stimulants into your system. And you know, one of the phrases I like to say is, whether it's coffee, whether it's energy drinks, whether it's energy shots, all these companies are trying to force you to drink something. I'm not thirsty. I just want energy. And that is why Run Gum is, in my opinion, better than all of those other delivery vehicles.
And, you know, when I do a 10K and I bring the burr grinder and the French press, it takes up room.
Yeah.
You need a exactly. Marathon Sherpa, Peter.
Yeah, you're at mile 20 and you're about to hit the wall and you need something. Are you going to stop for a latte or are you going to pop a couple pieces of Run Gum?
I'm waiting for that boiling water and the number 4 filter. Let's
go. You know, I have this idea that I'm going to run a marathon one day. I've never run one before. And as a publicity stunt, when I do run this marathon, I'm going to stop at mile, you know, 15 or 16 and stop and try to make it an espresso. And then just kick the whole machine to the curb and grab a couple pieces of Run Gum.
That's hilarious. Actually, that's an interesting point. You said you never ran a marathon. You have some of your running journals available online, and I was blown away by the number of the mileage that you put in training for, you know, a relatively short race, 800 meters. You're putting in serious miles. Now, a lot of them are easy. Sort of what's the logic and the result of putting in 60, 70, 80 miles a week for a short race?
Sure. So what you're referring to is I actually published my 2012 training log, the entire season worth of workouts that led to my fifth place finish at that Olympic Games. 142.95 is what I ended up running. I published that, and it's absolutely free for anyone that goes to rungum.com. You can download it. It's totally free. Just a resource that I wanted to put out there for people. And I was running 60 to 70 miles every single week in the lead up to those Olympic Games. And for a guy who only runs a half mile, you might be thinking, that's insane. Why are you running 70 miles? My long runs during that season were 13 or 14 miles at a time. But I'm a guy who believes in speed from strength. I come from a distance background. I ran cross country for 4 years in high school and 4 years in college. So, you know, my engine's a little bit different. I'm not a 45-second flat quarter miler. I would struggle to break 48 seconds, in fact. But I can go out and I can give you 5 by a mile repeats in under 5 minutes. You know, not a lot of 800-meter guys can do that. I can go out and give you a 16-mile long run and not be totally fazed by it. So I just have a different engine, and I've had to develop that engine a little bit differently than most other half-milers. Even in the world of half miling here, you know, at Brooks, the Brooks Beast Track Club, where we have half a dozen great middle distance runners, I'm still one of the higher mileage guys. But I think you play the cards that you're dealt. I'll never be a really fast sprinter, but I'm a sub 4 minute miler, and I have to play to my strengths when I step on the track and try to run 2 laps as fast as I can.
How does that process of selecting your specific event whittle down, especially at the Olympic level and, you know, years out? Are you making decisions with your coach? Are you running in different distances nationally or internationally? And or has that decision been made, you know, right out of college? How did that come about?
Yeah, great question. So in college, if you guys followed my collegiate career at all, the D3 level, I ran the 800 and the 1500 pretty much equally. I won national titles in both. And any given weekend, you'd find me on the track running one or the other, or sometimes both. And so when I turned pro, I started working with, you know, his name's Frank Gagliano. He's probably the most accomplished middle distance coach in all of the United States. And Coach Gag sat me down. He said, Nick, I can train you to be a world-class 800-meter runner, or I can train you to be a world-class miler, but I can't train you to do both at the same time. And I'm really glad he had that conversation with me, because I see a lot of people trying to be great at a lot of different events, and they end up being good, but not specializing in any one. And in this sport, you make teams by being great at one event. You make money by being great at one event. So I chose the half mile because I was young and I hadn't really developed my speed at all. And so I knew I could always move up to the mile. But at that time, at the age of 22, I said to Coach Gags, "Coach, make me the best half miler you can." And that's what we really focused on. And I went on to run some great miles, certainly, but really my training was all geared towards being the best half miler I could be. And I always thought I'd move up, but there's something about the half mile that just resonates with me. And to this day, even at the age of 32, I'm still a half miler.
At what point did you realize that you had a real shot at making your first Olympics?
Well, when I came out of college, I hadn't lost an 800 in 7 years. I lost an 800 in my sophomore year of high school, my first year ever running track. I took second at state that year. And I won the state title my junior year, my senior year. I won D3 titles my freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. So 7 years without ever losing an 800. And that's not I'm not bragging. That's a horrible statistic. It means you're not being put into races that are challenging enough. Right. It's just bad coaching. And it wasn't until my senior year, just after graduation, that I qualified for my first U.S. championships. And this is where everybody gets a chance to compete against the very best that this country has to offer. And I went out to Indianapolis and finished second. So here's a guy who hadn't lost in 7 years. No one had ever heard of him because he's a D3 kid. And I finished second to Kadivis Robinson. And as you know, our team selection takes the top three Americans in each event. So, you know, I'm sitting there sort of devastated that I've lost, because I hadn't lost in so long, but also ecstatic because I said to myself, if I can just stay ranked top three in the U.S., so I don't even need to improve from where I'm at right now, I'll be an Olympian. And this was 2006, so the first Olympics in my career as a professional would be 2008. And so I was thinking to myself, wow, I think if I really focus and dedicate myself to this sport, in 2 years, I'll have a very good shot of becoming an Olympian. And that's what happened. I went on to win the 2008 Olympic trials and punch my ticket to Beijing for my first Olympic Games.
Nick, I have a question. If you could compare and contrast Beijing to London, specifically the Athletes Village, which one was the bigger party?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask, because my event was at the very end of both of those Olympic Games. So I didn't spend much time in the village. When I was there, they were both great parties. They were both fantastic games, very well organized. I would say that London just was logistically easier because everyone spoke English and I'd spent so much time in London. And I was prepared. You know, you go into your first Olympic Games and you're kind of overwhelmed. It's just you're so honored to be there,
oh, yeah.
But everything's new and fresh and exciting. You know, going into London, I knew exactly what to expect, and I performed much better there.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the partying in the village goes, you need to ask the swimmers, because they go first. They're
seems like it's always the ones who get wet. Yeah, the ones who would like
water. Yeah, exactly. And the swimmers party so hard, and it really turns into a circus. You imagine this is a 3-week event, right? And the first day, everybody is on their best behavior. They're going to bed, you know, on time, and they're getting ready to compete at the very highest stage, something they've trained their entire life for. And then once their competition is over, they want to blow off steam and everything turns into a party. So you've got 10,500 athletes in the village, and each day more and more athletes are done with their events, and a higher percentage of those athletes starts blowing off steam. So if you're the poor 800 guy who's the very last day, the last 4 days of the games, you're looking at 10,000 people who are all partying, and I'm trying to stay focused. So I didn't spend that much time in the village in either one. I actually stayed outside the village.
So you're monk-like in your room, just waiting, biding your time.
You're trying to go to bed and get some good rest, but you hear 10,000 people outside your window partying.
That's awful.
Nick,
it's tough.
You mentioned food, and we actually do a segment on the show called Strap on the Feedbag.
I like it.
And a lot of people run and find that their diets or their need for food expands, or some people run because they find they can eat more and it doesn't affect them physically. And I'm sure in all of your years of training, and even perhaps now, you've either been exposed to or have even dove in on some odd diets or some very effective diets, or just have foods that basically that you run for?
Well, I'll just share my philosophy, and you talk to any pro runner, you're going to get a different philosophy probably, but my personal philosophy is if the furnace is hot enough, it'll burn anything. If I'm going to go out and run 10 miles a day, then the one benefit of that is I get to eat whatever I want, and I really do. There's nothing off limits to me. I drink beer year round. You know, you'll find me even the night before a big competition, you know, having a beer and sometimes even a burger. I'm blessed that I have kind of what I call an iron gut. You know, nothing really phases me. I could eat anything and probably not get sick. I don't know what it is, but genetics or something, but I'm able to eat pretty much anything, and I'm not allergic to anything. So I try to eat well-balanced meals. My mom raised me on an almost entirely organic diet. I really do like vegetables and fruits, and I try to make sure my plates are colorful. But if I drive by a Taco Bell and I feel like having a burrito, I'm going to have a burrito. If it's the off-season, I feel like drinking a six-pack, I'll drink a six-pack. I really am not that particular with my diet. I sometimes wonder if I was really, really particular with my diet, if I could have eked out an extra half second in the half mile or another second in the mile. But I would have been unhappy doing that. And one of the reasons I'm almost 33 and I'm still running professionally was because I had fun with my career, and I didn't make it a chore. I didn't over-sacrifice like some athletes like to do.
Nick, what's your next big goal for yourself professionally, whether it be professional running or professional running accoutrements like the Run Gum? What's the next big thing for you?
That's a great question. And I think people like to ask, you know, what are you going to do after running? And so many runners are caught off guard because they're like, they don't think about anything life after running. It's stressful for them to think about that. From the day I turned pro, I always knew I was one twisted ankle or one broken kneecap away from retirement. And so I've always thought about it. It's one of the reasons I started a business in the prime of my career rather than waiting, you know, till I was retired to start it. But my life after running looks a lot like my life right now. I feel that every single day I want to be physically challenged and I want to be mentally challenged. And, you know, there will come a day where I can't run around a track anymore, and I'll move to the roads or I'll move to the mountains. You know, I recently announced that I have an intention of climbing the Seven Summits, the tallest mountain on every continent, and I'm working hard towards that goal. I do want to run 2017. I want to make one more world team, and then I'll take it from there. But every single day I want to wake up and train for a new race or a new summit, and I want to work on my business, Run Gum. You know, Run Gum has grown so fast in the last 2 years, it's been almost overwhelming. And as the CEO, you know, I have to keep up with that. And I'm up every day at 6 a.m. I usually don't go to bed until 10 or 11, and I'm working most of those hours, whether it's training or working on Run Gum. And I couldn't be happier. I absolutely love to work. I love to feel challenged athletically and through business. And, you know, every day is just so exciting. And I encourage people to always have, and especially professional athletes, to always have something else outside of their athletic goals to look forward to or to work on when maybe running isn't going, you know, perfectly.
Well, and I think that's a great message. You had mentioned talking with kids, especially in high school or in college, in terms of motivation. Is that also part of what you do?
I do a bit of motivational speaking. You know, as a D3 kid who... You came from Boise, Idaho. You know, I took a very strange path to becoming an Olympian. And, you know, I hear all these kids, you know, that say, well, I'm not fast enough to go to a D1 school. There's no hope for me of ever becoming a professional. I love to talk to these kids. I am that guy. I wasn't recruited. I wasn't offered a single scholarship to a D1 school. Not a single school offered me a scholarship in high school. And I was a 9-time state champion. You know, so I went to a Division III school where I could continue to develop and focus on my academics. And, you know, all these kids who say, well, I'm not going to go to a Division I school, a major conference school, so I have no chance. That's absolute horseshit. And anyone who tells you otherwise is just a hater. So there is a program for every single kid out there. Every single kid that wants to run in college, there is absolutely an option for you. It could be NAIA. It could be D2. It could be D3. There are so many programs out there. You know, many of them have walk-on programs like Willamette did. And so I love to connect with kids who think that they don't have an option to run in college, because every one of them does.
That's an awesome and inspiring story. I really appreciate the time you spent with us, Nick. Do you? Can you give us all your contact information that you want people to look at beyond RunGum? Are you? Of course, you're on social media.
Yeah, so I've been really active on social media. You know, since 2006, I grew up with, you know, it's so funny when Facebook, you had to have a .edu, you had to have a collegiate address. I was there for that. And so I've been really active on social ever since. I'm at Nick Simmons on, Twitter and Instagram, and I'm very active on both. Of course, RunGum is also active on both, at RunGum. You can also learn more about my career, NickSimmons.com. And you can learn everything you need to know about RunGum at RunGum.com.
Nick, if you're ever in the Boston area, of course, we want you by the famous HWYRT studios. And if I may, could we put in a request for a coffee and donut flavored RunGum?
Absolutely. And we are always coming out with new flavors. We're working on something big right now. And I was actually in the Boston area recently. I ran Reach the Beach last month. Oh. And what an awesome event. You know, I know that there were 8,000 participants, and most of them are from the Boston area. And so I just want to say, you know, you guys live in a really beautiful part of the country. It was so cool to see New England. And we're trying to close that Marathon Sports deal. So I want every one of your listeners to go into Marathon Sports and demand that they carry RunGum.
And listen to HWYRT. I agree.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you, Nick.
Easy. Thanks so much.
You guys are awesome. Thanks.
Thank bye-bye. You. Peter, I don't want to say that this show is going places.
Then don't.
But we just interviewed a two-time Olympian.
We sure did. And we chewed on his very caffeinated gum. And I don't... Why did you let me put two of the pieces in my mouth at once?
I don't know, because we literally put gum right in our mouths, RunGum in our mouths, as we began the interview. I started, my face was flush, and I was sweating profusely within 3 minutes. I all I wanted to do was get up out of my chair and run outside.
Yeah,
and you put two in your mouth.
I put two, and I can definitely say it works. It delivers caffeine to you.
It is an effective mechanism
for delivery.
It definitely is,
and... Wow.
I'm going to try it again.
Yeah.
When you don't need all that coffee sloshing around your stomach.
No.
Come on, break.
Hey, Peter, for anybody who's local to the Cambridge, Boston, Massachusetts area, and they want to try out one of Dan Fitzgerald's treadmill running classes, how do they get a discount?
Oh, yes. Good point, Brian. They should go to heartbreakhillrunningcompany.com. Go under the section about the studio classes there on the in the treadmill section. And there's going to be classes and packets. And all they got to do is when they sign up, make sure to use promo code HWYRT. Now, that's all in caps. This is a caps-sensitive issue, people. HWYRT. And that will give you 20% off your price for the month of October.
Peter, you might be interested to know that you can also buy RunGum at Heartbreak Hill Running Company.
And I highly recommend it.
Hope to see you there.
You can really be there. I'm going to be off on the side just handing
out. Well, I was talking to the listeners, Peter, not you.
Oh, no.
I know you
oh.
won't be there. Hope to see all of you folks there.
Would it bum you out if I was there, though? Feel like
no,
I'd
be all right if you're just sort of on the side.
Holding
sipping water or something. Yeah, Peter, can you hold this towel, my sweat towel, please?
I just have your RunGum in one hand after you've done chewing it 15 times.
Peter, RunGum.
Hey.
Hey. This has been episode 47 of How Was Your Run Today with Peter Villa and Brian Gould. Music by Jeff Cronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence. Many thank yous to Best Buddies 5K winner Ryan Iapica and our very special guest, Nick Simmons.
You can join the show by sending us an email or a voice memo with your questions, musing, or rants, and sending it to us at howwasyourruntoday@gmail.com. Listen to us each and every week wherever you collect podcasts. Brian keeps his in a decommissioned Olympic athletes village. But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Every single one of those makes a difference in how this little here show is ranked.
And if you love HWYRT, please share our posts on social media. It's free and it's easier than chewing four pieces of RunGum before your power nap.
Yeah, don't do that. Stay wide awake.
For everything else, please check out the new website, including the store, at HWYRT.com.
Hey, Brian, what do you have on tap for a long run this weekend?
I think I have 16, and then I have the Mount Desert Island half.
Oh, when do you get to dip back a little bit? Or are you at the point now where the half is a dip back?
That's right. It's a dip back.
Watch out for the dip bottles. Call back.
Peter, don't run.
Done.
Okay, now this is the real waveform. This is the real recording levels.
That makes me laugh what you did there before.
What?
With my fake levels.
Your fevels?
My faux levels? My flables.
Your flevels?
Well, now why does that look so small?
Yeah, because I turned your gain down one tick.
But how many ticks do I need?
All of them. How's this?
I don't know.
How's this then?
I think it's good.
Yeah, how's this then?
I don't know.